Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And through my inbox this day came a really cool announcement that Helene Grimaud was going to come under the auspices of CAMA. That's our chamber music group. And she's going to play for Santa Barbara. And I thought, oh, I want to talk to Justin. I have Justin Rizzo Weaver with us, who's the managing director of CAMA. And we're going to talk a little bit about what CAMA is, what they do, who they present. And they present some incredible people. I mean, Helene is coming, but also, Richard, one of the pieces that I downloaded that I want to talk about during the hour is Mahler, and Mahler is played by none other than the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and CAMA's bringing them as well. So they do a wonderful job, and they present all kinds of opportunities for us that we would never really get to do. So Justin, I'm happy you're with us. We'll talk a little bit about the role of CAMA, and how did you get started with the organization?
Yeah, thanks for asking us. Actually, Elizabeth, I'm the director of operations for CAMA. Our president is Mark Trueblood, who's been there longer than I have. So my role at CAMA is to manage the concerts primarily. There are some other things I do too, but that I'm very privileged to be doing for CAMA what CAMA does. Our mission is to present the world's finest classical music in Santa Barbara, and that's my job basically, is to assure that the details for the concerts that we present here happen and go according to plan. So,
okay, so that's got to be the stage manager type role, right?
Is that it actually differs from stage management in some ways, but it's also similar. Presenter side stage management is less involved in maybe setting up stages. I work with the union contacts at both of our theaters for that, as well as their stage managers and stage coordinators and technical directors, and anyone else who may be involved on the side of orchestras or soloists. Usually orchestras have their own technical crews as well.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of titles and positions that it could get confusing to talk about them, but my role is something of a liaison between the presenter side issues that we have as CAMA, since we're hosting these orchestras locally,
yeah,
and the details that come with that.
And dear listener, Justin is at home because he's watching his three boys, and I can hear a dog too. It's Thanksgiving week, and so everything is a little bit crazy and up in the air, but he's kind enough to come along and just say, look, if there's background noise, there's background noise.
Yeah, that's, I have no shortage of ambient noise.
That's right. So, Justin, how did you get involved? I mean, what kind of training did you have to take?
I have a degree in music, and I was actually pursuing a degree in linguistics at the time I started working at CAMA. Neither one of those degrees, I'd say, is really a prerequisite for the work that I do, although it helps to have some musical knowledge. They both feel like they happened in a different lifetime now, as I've really been consumed with what I do professionally for CAMA for the last 2 years, and my mind is kind of trained to think in those terms instead of in what I trained in as a musician. So.
Okay, so what was your instrument when you trained?
I studied music composition, so I wrote music.
Okay, all right. And so you've been with CAMA, what'd you say, 8 years?
20.
20? You don't look old enough to have a job for 20 years.
Well, I was young when I started.
Okay, and so let me ask you, so when you get this idea that you're going to present the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, and the board decides we're going to approach the orchestra, I mean, how do you ask the Chicago Symphony, or how does that happen?
I'll jump in right there, actually, because it's fun to talk about how this process actually works. So we have a board member who's a stellar individual in terms of booking, and booking is a talent and also something that's cultivated over years of experience. His name is Stephen Cloud. He also does the same for the Santa Barbara Bowl and the Lobero, and he managed Keith Jarrett, the pianist, for many decades too. He has all the appropriate contacts necessary to make these things happen. It helps that Santa Barbara is on the A-list for tours. CAM has been a presenter of record for our region for over 100 years. The result of that is that we're very much considered a classical music capital, and we're on the first call list for anything that anyone would ever care to see and hear. So it really works the opposite direction. Sometimes we can headhunt for recitals, like, for example, Aileen Grimaud. She doesn't tour that often, but we have a close relationship, having presented her before. And with somebody like Aileen, we could make a specific request and say, do you have any dates? But with an orchestra like Chicago, this is not something where CAMA would just come on their door, knocking on their door, and expect to be able to leverage an entire institution with all the expenses associated with that. It's very much a matter of their knocking on our door. So the privilege is ours to be asked in the first place, and not many are. There aren't that many locations in the United States with presenters who are situated and have the means to present these type of orchestras. And you also have to have a sizable donor base locally as well. CAMA exists and does what we do as a result of donations, large results of donations from generous local patrons. And this is the way it has been, of course, for centuries with classical music, both in Europe and in the United States.
Let me understand this. So because you've got a great kind of connector person on the board,
right,
who's been a booking agent for music for years and years.
That's
and
correct.
He does the same for the bowl, I understand.
Yes, for the Santa Barbara Bowl and the Lobero Theater Foundation.
Okay, yeah. So he knows people. He knows people in the industry, and he knows who to call, and he knows who to contact. And then on the other hand, because CAMA's been around for 100 years or so, there's a reputation of Santa Barbara as a classical music capital.
Yes.
And there's the money to actually bring a group.
Yes.
And, of course, I would imagine there's the intangibles, like an appreciative audience that would buy tickets, that have the track record of attending such events. And then I would also think the weather would help.
And yes, it's no coincidence that these classical music capitals, with some exceptions, New York being one of them, they're not known for good weather. But unless it's a major, major city, most of the outlying stops on tours are going to be in communities where you have at least maybe 4 out of 5 of those factors that you mentioned going for it. And some of them are weather driven. California stops and Florida stops, for example. And I think Santa Barbara really has absolutely everything in terms of being in a desirable location for presenting. And I wouldn't underestimate, though, the track record and the fact that we take good care of orchestras and soloists who play here. That does not go unnoticed. And having that long relationship and having presented many concerts that all went well leaves people saying good things about Santa Barbara. And then they come here, and of course, it's beautiful. You know, they want to go take a dip in the ocean. They wish they were staying here and not in a hotel out of town. Right. I've heard people speak in superlatives and say, oh, we should come back and have a music festival here. And, you know, of course, these are, million-dollar ideas that they're throwing around, but they're probably not going to happen. But what they're saying from their heart is what a good time they had here, and how warm our audiences are. Time and again, those that perform on our stages go out of their way to comment about how well received they felt they were, and to compliment our audiences. So you were quite correct to mention that as a factor as well. So you put these all together in a soup, and you have the potential for a successful institution as a presenter.
Now, when you say that artists feel they're well taken care of. What does it take to take good care of an artist? What are the factors? I mean, is it creature comforts? Is it the famous story of pulling the right color jelly beans out of the jar for whoever, what was that great performer who only wanted certain color jelly beans in his green room?
Glasgow musicians as a group, not to overgeneralize, but I would say that they are largely undemanding, no matter what their level of celebrity, with some very few exceptions. Many of them, particularly soloists, travel almost anonymously and are not well known visually to the public, and so they don't really enjoy any, they escape any mobbing on the streets, so to speak, and generally have a pretty down-to-earth attitude about what they do. Most of them happen to be talented beyond measure and exceptionally good at what they do, which of course is why we present them. But they're very much soloists, and small groups, especially those that we present at the Libero, are very much under completely in our care and dependent on our goodwill and taking good care of them during the time that they're here, which includes, you know, booking hotels, you know, making sure that they have transportation when that's required. Occasionally people will live close enough to drive themselves, but that's certainly not the norm. Making sure that there's proper catering in the venue and that times for rehearsal have been taken care of, especially times that may occur outside of concert day when it may have to happen off-site. And a very careful reading of contracts and riders that's respectful and inclusive is necessary too. And that is often lacking from what we hear in other places where artists perform. Sometimes I'm shocked to hear how many compliments we get simply for having done what was asked of us in the contract, in the rider, which seems the bare minimum decent thing to do.
Well, give me an example of that, Justin. Maybe when we get back from the break. In other words, you've got in the contract that you're going to do certain things. I'm interested to know what the scope of the contractual small potatoes might be. And then maybe if you say, well, okay, they're surprised because we did this, and it was told that we were going to do that in the contract, but they were surprised because, and I wanted to know what you did that surprised, a great artist. So, hey, Richard, sure. Let's go to quick break. We get back from the break. And by the way, we're going to go in and out with music by the two talents, I'll say, that Kama is bringing. Helene Grimaud, a pianist, and when you hear a single piano piece when we go in and out, that's her playing, and the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I've also downloaded some wonderful music. It's just a kind of an amazing thing that Justin can get the whole symphony orchestra here. And when I think of even getting a family of four anywhere, you know, we're talking a major, major thing. Okay, Richard, go to quick break. Back with Justin Russo Weaver in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I have the pleasure of speaking with Justin Russo Weaver, Director of Operations for CAMA. And just a little background, if you're just tuning in, CAMA is over 100 years old, organization for classical music of all types and sizes. I was incorrect when I said, you know, chamber music. I know them for chamber music, but there's many other, you know, talents that they bring. For example, the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, that's not a chamber quartet. And then Eileen Grimald is coming very shortly, also to perform. And she's just a dynamic, interesting, like fiery, passionate pianist and beautiful. So that's going to be quite a treat to see her. Justin is the director of operations. So what we're talking about is what it takes to bring the Chicago Symphony Orchestra or a temperamental artist. And Justin was saying, you know, first of all, just to recap, there's a combination of things that make Santa Barbara a to-go place, a place where artists want to perform. One is the solicitousness that HAMA takes in their contract preparedness. And I said to Justin, okay, well, what does that look like? I mean, what do you promise in the contract that would be a surprise to us, you know, listeners? And once we get that out of the way, what that surprise is, well, how do you uphold it? And because the comment Justin made before we went to the break was, they were always amazed that we actually carry out our promises. So, Justin, what would surprise us in a contract?
Yeah. Well, for an orchestra, the greatest surprise is often that we have provided catering as specified in the contract. That is often a genuine surprise that we've read that and that any food items mentioned are literally there. So,
does that mean like a special diet type of request?
No, it's just lists of items that you would imagine a hungry group of people would want on breaks. Occasionally, it's an actual meal. And it's catered downstairs at the Granada and usually in people's rooms at the Libero, occasionally in the common area. We contract with some very excellent caterers at the Granada. Cynthia Black has been our caterer for, I think, 3 seasons now. Before that, it was Wendy Tarasik, and they're really the best of the best in terms of anticipating people's needs and going above and beyond. They've understood that if it's a British orchestra, for example, what teas they may want when they say tea, what British people actually drink, and that they use whole milk and never half and half with tea. These are little details that are noticed. And I always go downstairs and study up too, because then I become one of the people who's seasoned enough to understand these details as well and pass them on in other contexts as well. So with orchestras, contracts are different because orchestras are usually managing themselves on tour or contracting with major management companies. Major management companies were extremely embattled during the pandemic, and some of them even folded or were Phoenix-like reborn in smaller versions with, you know, multiple people having kind of broken off into having boutique management for, you know, a few orchestras that used to be their clients. So the whole scene for orchestra management in particular has changed dramatically since the pandemic. But we're still looking at a similar situation where you have a contract where the orchestras, they really need to rely on either their management or their own staff for many details in putting together a tour, or it's just going to be too much of an X factor. They can't leave too many things to chance on a tour with that many people involved.
I want to just ask you a little bit about the direction of management changing over the pandemic and how that impacts what you do, Justin. So you said that there's management that have changed in structure, that some have gotten smaller, some have gone on to boutique, et cetera. And how does that make your job better or worse?
It's neither. Many of the same people are involved. It's just the large management companies that were literally around for decades, pushing a century in some cases, did not survive the pandemic or had to go on in a different form. And there's a lot of details that could be that we don't have time to get into for that, but that's a good synopsis of the situation. But the folks who actually served as managers, particularly managers who were partners in those organizations and very senior had the means to kind of reconstitute their clientele under a new umbrella, basically. And many of the people who had formerly served in certain capacities are still around. So I wouldn't say it's changed a lot. There's been maybe some decrease in what management companies are able to offer in terms of handholding. But we've never shied away from needing to do things ourselves at Canva anyway. So I think that it's all good. It's just different and it's evolving. But it's not a crisis at this time. As it was unfolding, it was a crisis because you had major management corporations like Columbia Artists, which, I mean, everybody and their mother knows what they are. And that did not survive the pandemic. Columbia Artists folded during the pandemic, which is an amazing fact. But their people involved in the organization who are doing the managing are still around and still booking orchestras.
Okay, so I want to know a little bit more about the bells and whistles. So I want to hear some numbers. You know, the largest organization you've actually brought as operations manager, you know, I would expect the Chicago Symphony Orchestra is up there in terms of body count.
Yeah,
I want to know that. And Richard's going to tell us we have to go to a quick break. But these are things I want to talk about. We get back from the break. The size, the largest thing, the largest production you've ever mounted, Justin. The largest, the most enjoyable production you've ever mounted, personally speaking. The worst, I'd like to hear the worst if you want to share it with us. You don't have to name names. But No such thing. How fantastic is that? Okay, so we'll cross that out. The best, the most fun for Justin, the largest in body count as far as production, and then what Canva is, in other words, how many patrons, how do people find out more, how do they become donors, et cetera, and do you have a good donor base, et cetera? What other things do you do to raise money besides the, you know, ticket sales, for example?
Mm-hmm.
So those are the two factors I'd like to talk about. Hey, Richard.
Yes, Elizabeth.
Okay, we'll go to quick break. Just another shout out. We're celebrating Canva, but also because Canva's bringing two really great talents. Aline Grimald is coming, wonderful pianist. And the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Richard. I grew up in Chicago. And that was my orchestra. And I think it was Sir George Schulte was there at the time when I was in high school. And my mom was... She was with the Lyric. She was the accompanist, the rehearsal accompanist pianist. When I was growing up, we'd go down there and she would rehearse. She was the rehearsal pianist. So I was behind the scenes at many times as a little kid. Never forgot the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and the power.
Mention the dates as well, because Hélène Grimaud is coming right up on December the 7th.
Yes.
Chicago is out in January the 25th. But if both of those concerts are likely to be perhaps our first true sellout since the pandemic.
It's been
slow to rebuild. So if people want to go, they'd better think about buying tickets now, not later. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, Rich, let's go to quick break, and I want to hear Justin, his top pick. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm speaking with operations manager of Canva, Justin Rizzo Weaver, and we're talking about, you know, his job as operations manager. And I had no idea, you know, he's been in that position for 20 years, and the kind of thing that goes into, you know, the preparation to bring an entire symphony orchestra to Santa Barbara, rehearse them, feed them, water them, entertain them. get their contracts in order, do this right, you know, make sure they have transportation. I don't know. I guess you even have to wake them up occasionally.
Thankfully, we haven't had to go that far.
So what's your biggest venue? Well, I'm not venue. What's your biggest production, Justin?
You know, it doesn't get any bigger than Chicago. Chicago travels with two tractor trailers, and one is the ordinary situation. Chicago has a lot of staff that come with them. Chicago can push 110 people in orchestra size, which just about bursts the britches of the Granada Theater. I'm not sure if we're quite that high on this time. I think it's maybe only 90 people. But occasionally we'll see orchestras past the 100 mark, at which time it gets pretty crowded on the Granada stage. Often what makes a production big isn't even necessarily how many people are physically performing in it, but on how much of an entourage they come with. And there is no entourage more grand than an orchestra like Chicago, which truly does tour with most of their staff.
So what is the staff? I mean, who's on the staff? Like you say, an entourage for the orchestra. So obviously you've got the directors, the conductor's assistants, and the understudies, and the this, that. And but what kind of staff members?
Well, you usually on a tour, on a large tour, usually the CEO of the orchestra will be present, as well as that person's support, executive support staff. And then you'll usually see the technical staff are all there, of course, as well as the people who have assistant roles. That word does no justice for the positions of being assistant to a maestro, which is a very involved and critical role in any orchestral institution. Those folks will be present. Often some people have two or three assistants, depending on what their responsibilities are like. It can really add up. There can be a lot of people there. And if they're traveling with management as well, if they have a third-party management organization involved, that management company, like the former Columbia Artists when they were around, Opus 3, other large ones like that, they'll send their people out as well, including their technical staff and some of their senior production people. And usually a tour manager who's often a contractor who specializes in following orchestras around and making sure that from the orchestra side that needs are being met in interacting with presenters. So if there's a lot of that, it can be very busy backstage and feel very busy, even if the orchestra is only 80 people.
And so what it's intriguing to me, I had no idea that maestros had assistants and sometimes up to three assistants. What does maestro's assistants do? I mean, obviously they have something to do with making sure the scores are in order and there's a library of music.
Well, ideally, Well, a librarian would do that. That's another position, too, of somebody who will always be touring with the orchestra. A person who pushes around a huge cart that has a bunch of scores organized in it and then has them set out together with the technical people on the desks. So another very important role. A music director ideally is focusing on creative aspects of music direction and some clerical aspects, but most other details are going to be in the bailiwick of their staff. So, and often those staff are hired by them personally, and they kind of report just to the music director, not necessarily to the institution or the rest of the orchestra. There could be a variety of arrangements. You know, this is not all one way or all the other.
But Justin, what does an assistant to a maestro do?
Well, I can't say that I know everything that they do, but I know that they're in charge of their calendars. They're in charge of communicating some artistic details with third parties like presenters. If there's publicity and press involved, they may work with their publicist on making sure they're available for those dates. They're doing a lot of personal assistant type jobs that might be similar to what a personal assistant would do for a CEO of a corporation. So in fact, I think that's very analogous. They're gatekeepers. the people you communicate with instead of, you know, the maestro, until they come personally. So it's a very large job, and just as it was, might have been difficult for you to imagine what someone in my position does, it would be equally, I think, difficult for me to imagine fully what somebody in that position does. And it would be interesting to hear what I've left out. So.
Okay, now we get to hear. Okay, Richard, this is giving us time. We got to go to quick break. I want to know the top performances, yeah, that, you know, Justin, yeah, personally would relive in a heartbeat, you know, when we get back from the break. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break just to reintroduce. Pleasure of speaking with Justin Rizzo Weaver. He is the operations manager for KEMA. I had no idea how involved, when, you know, the curtain opens and there's a bunch of people in black suits and everything, everybody's sitting down and everybody's ready to go. What I'm hearing is there's so much behind the scenes going on that we will never know about, that we'll never even imagine. You know, the images of somebody pushing a big cart with a million scores and making sure they go onto the right racks and the right chairs are there and this and that and, you know, all this. And then the assistant to the maestro, you know, being the gatekeeper and watching out for maestro and doing his press materials and getting that organized and doing his calendar and all this, this major, major circus that goes along with such a job that Justin does. It's quite astounding. Okay, we'll go to quick break. When we get back from the break, Justin's going to tell us his favorite performances.
I'll be very happy to.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Storm speaking with Justin Rizzo Weaver. And I'm just learning that, you know, Justin has a location in Santa Barbara, but he also has a location elsewhere. Can you do your job from your other location virtually, Justin?
Yeah, it's actually easier this way because it improves the quality of focus I have on the job. And it especially protects the days around concerts. So when I come down always a bit early before a concert, I'm doing nothing but work for KAMA without distraction. And if I need to stay up late at night and just plow through with things, it's very easy to do that. So it allows me to be very responsive.
Well, you don't actually have to be close to the stage for performance.
I'm usually on the stage during the performance, but you can't see me. I'm just beyond your sight lines. So I'll be at stage right. So if you were sitting in the house, that would be on the left side.
Yeah.
And I'll be behind whatever shelves or curtains are present on that side, listening from that vantage.
Okay, well, that's a nice segue into the next question. Your favorite shows, your favorite.
Yeah. You know, there's when I think about the many concerts that I've been involved in, which is now quite a lot. It's always the quality of connection I have with the people that we're presenting that makes these a concert stand out for me, probably more so than even happens on the stage. And there are some amazing things that happen on the stage. For example, I would say that any performance we've had by Sir Andras Schiff at the Libero has been memorable beyond belief, just due to his almost laser-like concentration and calm that he brings to the piano bench. And then his hands just speak almost as if he's perched in another room watching them. His artistry is on a level that defies imagination. He can play for 2.5 hours without breaking a sweat. He's also, again, it's probably having spent a little bit of time with him outside the concert hall, that I feel warmly disposed to him as well, and that carries over in how I listen. And you know, I would say the same thing about concerts we presented by Dawn Upshaw, the soprano at the Lovero. I just, getting to know Dawn a little bit was a real pleasure, and her very large-hearted way in the world comes across. Stephen Huff, now Sir Stephen Huff, the pianist, again, we presented him multiple times at the Lovero. I really treasure him as a human being. I did an interview with him during the pandemic and got to know him even more personally during that, and his honesty and disclosure about his life and childhood, and his just very genuine but also extremely kind of elevated and beautiful way in the world is, makes it, hearing his performances go even deeper, I think.
So list those names again. List those names again so people can look those names up and remember.
Sir András Schiff.
Yeah.
And Stephen Huff, now Sir Stephen Huff, Dawn Upshaw. I would certainly mention Isabel Bayraktarian. I would certainly mention Anonymous Four. These are all libero concerts, because, and the reason these stand out for me is because it's the chamber musicians and soloists that I get to know better. They're more dependent on our involvement. So often I meet them at the airport. I often spend time with them. Occasionally I may get to have dinner with somebody. Yeah, so it's a different level of engagement there that feels very personal and warm. And the human scale of what I do is probably what I treasure the most about the job. So
the human scale. So that would mean that the individual performers, with the less entourage and the chamber music artists, for example, that you would have greater contact with. Is that
working with staff and management companies and orchestras, and with the people, musicians from orchestras and maestros as well, is also extremely rewarding. It just has a different energy. And there've been many memorable performances there too, including Chicago Symphony's last visit some years ago. Almost any visit by the LA Phil, there's gonna be an alarm going off. I apologize, let me unplug this.
No problem.
I don't even remember what sounds you might hear here.
The LA Phil.
Yeah, almost any visit by LA Phil. Gustavo Dudamel is a very special person who's extremely personable and warm. And that was certainly true of Esa-Pekka Salonen before him as well. I think they've done a great job working with music directors who get that people matter and are good with people. In addition to being outstanding talents on the podium, they've been very good at developing the orchestra from the inside out and recruiting some of the most talented orchestras it's had in its over century of existence. LA Phil is the same age as Canada, by the way, and we've been presenting them since the very beginning.
And then if people want to support Cam, obviously we can go to the performances. But people want to support Cam, they want to support what Cam does.
What happened
during the pandemic? I mean, could you use the help now that we're coming out of it?
Always. So the situation has very much changed post-pandemic. And I don't think we understood during the pandemic what it was changing to yet. And it's still evolving. CAMA is an old institution that I believe sincerely will weather any storm, but we are faced with times that are different than any we've ever been faced with. And we've been through a lot. We've been through World War II. We've been through, when you're on for 100 years, there's been many recessions and ups and downs and depressions and economic adversities, as well as just situational adversities, like Montecito mudslides was no small matter when that happened.
Yeah. Right.
So we've kind of seen it all. The last pandemic occurred just before our founding. So we hadn't really seen a pandemic or understood. What does a recovery from pandemic look like for an organization like CAMA? This is kind of uncharted territory. But what I can say unequivocally is that donor support is extremely important now, as always, but perhaps never as important as it is now. Ticket sales have never constituted the balance of what's necessary to present orchestras. They've probably barely been half of what's necessary for most of our history. And now they're not even a third of that. So this is a time in which donors make a huge impact. And when people treasure this music and want to continue to hear it performed locally and be part of a tradition that does span over a century, this is our 104th concert season, they do step up and give, and we're extremely grateful for it. It is donors who love the music who make it happen. And that's what powers classical music. It's a fact of it.
Okay, so and Richard, are you giving us a sign we have to go for? Oh, okay, this
no,
is not a break.
Break.
We have to say goodbye.
Going to break.
Okay, we have to go to quick break. Good, because I had a couple more questions about how we can support Kama and you know where we can support Kama and if there's anything we can do elsewhere. I mean, this is kind of a shock to think that a 100-year-old organization went through the pandemic, and Justin kind of said something made my hair curl, which is we're not even sure what it's going to look like, even though we're coming out the other end. We're still not sure what it's going to look like. So,
and this is true for the entire industry, by the way. Classical music was hit harder than any other performing industry during the pandemic. Its demographics are such that it was set up to be hit very hard because it tends to be powered by retirees.
Yeah.
People with time.
Right.
It's not even interest. There's plenty of people my age and younger who love classical music. And there's a whole generation of people coming up who are consuming it ravenously on YouTube. You know, people my kids' age, many of them know classical music. It's just that the scene is changing where live performance, you know, remains a venue that, you know, people who are retired are going to be the primary participants in that.
Okay, let's go to quick break. I want to focus on that when we get back from the break, the demographics and what Justin just said was really interesting, that if you had to predict what art form would be the hardest hit, we could almost have predicted classical music for a lot of different reasons. So I want to focus on that and how we can help Kama when we get back from the break. Richard, let's go to quick break. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute. Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm talking with Justin Rizzo Weaver. We're talking about Kama. We've got 3 minutes, Justin. So now you were saying the pandemic has changed classical music just by the blessing of the demographics, older folks with time, hard hit by the pandemic anyway, the proximity, the idea of breath, the idea of interiority, all of these, you know, damning factors about the pandemic. And so we would like to help Kama. So how do we do that?
The number one thing somebody can do to support Kama is to come to our concerts. So rebuilding a sense of a vibrant and full auditorium is crucial for the backdrop upon which the thriving of this art occurs. Live performance is a special experience, and we need people to be there. If somebody, please come out December 7th for Alain Grimaud and hear this astounding recital that's going to be given by somebody who performed last at Carnegie Hall. You know, that she's direct from Carnegie Hall to Santa Barbara. Come out on January the 25th for Chicago Symphony Orchestra at the Granada Theater. So, and just being there is the first step to become engaged with Kama. If you've been engaged in the past, re-engage. You know, this is a good time to come back. We're still doing what we did before just as well, and the music is still the music, right? So we need to rekindle that. Out of that backdrop, that's what where donor cultivation occurs. It's friend raising first and then fundraising. you have to love this music and be there to want to give to it, right? And our most steadfast donors are people who are the most steadfast in their love of the music and in their attendance and in their engagement. They are truly our friends and part of our CAMA family. You know, it's largely through the efforts of our current development director that her name is Elizabeth Alvarez. She's extremely talented at understanding the importance that these are our friends and that the CAMA touch is to treat people and patrons as people and to cultivate these personal connections out of which genuine giving occurs. And I'm confident that with that in place, the CAMA will have a very bright future.
That's fantastic. Justin, thank you for being with us, and thank you for letting us into your home and hearing a mini recital in the background.
Yes,
I hear you know the little toy piano going off and the little feet going. So that was fun.
Thank you.
I wish your family all the best these holidays.
Likewise, Elizabeth. Likewise. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Bye.